At Irons at West Charlotte High School. It is the 26th of March, 1999. And I guess I'll just start with, then you tell me how you came to be at West Charlotte High School.
Well, my neighborhood is zoned to go to West Charlotte, and my older sister came here, and it was sort of just the procession of the natural order to come on and move from East Over Elementary to Alexander Graham Middle, just come on to West Charlotte. It wasn't a, you know, groundbreaking decision to for me to come here.
Yeah. Had you had contact with West Charlotte then through your sister?
Yes, yes. She's 4 years older than me. So she graduated 2 years before I came. And I came as a sophomore, and I'd already, you know, there's a sort of a mystique that goes about West Charlotte where you hear about it and younger brothers and sisters can't wait to go to football games and, you know, wear maroon and gold and things like that. So I'd had a lot of contact with it before I came.
Yeah. When you say the mystique, can you define that a little bit more, or is it something that can't really be defined?
It's kind of undefinable, but I would say that it's based around being able, you know, to tell other people that you go to West Charlotte and have them, you know, be like, oh, you go to West Charlotte, really? And, you know, wear your West Charlotte sweatshirts and T-shirts and just have people know that you go to West Charlotte. I think it's sort of a pride thing where the student body is proud of, you know, West Charlotte, and they're proud to be here. And, I mean, I haven't been to another high school in Charlotte that's had as much, you know, school spirit, per se, as we have.
What are students proud about? What are you proud about going to West Charlotte?
I would say in terms of just sheer pride, in terms of with your peers at other schools, a lot of it is based around athletics, about, you know, our basketball team does this and our football team does that. But on a deeper level, in terms of who you are when you leave West Charlotte, I think it's you gain an understanding of how people other than yourself live. I'm not sure that, and I don't mean to put these schools down, but I'm not sure that if I went to a South Mac or a Providence that I would be aware of, you know, in intelligent minority underprivileged kids who made it, who are the success stories. And when you see so often, you know, oh, well, you know, this is bad publicity about, you know, these minorities or these underprivileged kids on the news or in the paper and acting in ways which you know are less than desirable. But at West Charlotte, you get more of a view of the whole spectrum, where you see, I mean, you do see the kids who, you know, aren't cutting it, but more than that, I see the kids who have really picked themselves up by the bootstraps, so to speak, and done it for themselves. And it's more impressive for me because I'm not sure that, I mean, my mom has been a huge influence in my education, and she's always pushed me, and education has always been, you know, the focal point of my childhood. And for some of these kids who are doing as well or better than I am, it hasn't been, and it's been an independent endeavor to be successful, and I'm shocked by that and just really impressed. And it opens you, and it makes you aware that, you know, simply because someone doesn't have money, or simply because someone's not your same color, or they don't talk like you, or they don't look like you, they have as much to offer, and you shouldn't count them out before you hear what they have to say.
How do you become aware of these things about other students while you're here?
I would say mostly through classroom interaction, where you'll be in a classroom discussion and someone that you never really thought about will say something really intuitive or you know, exactly what you wanted to say, but you didn't have the, you know, the verbal ability to express it. And, you know, you think, wow, like I had no idea that this person like had the ability for that kind of thought, or had the ability to be that responsive. And more than that, I would say just in interacting and getting to know people, I think there are a lot of stereotypes around, you know, this is how this class of people is supposed to act, and this is how this class of people is supposed to act. And I think West Charlotte really defies that. You know, their country club kids and, you know, kids from, you know, projects at the same basketball game, you know, standing next to each other, cheering just the same way. And you see them in the hall and, you know, you get to know people here instead of stereotypes, I'd say. I mean, I think it's a really diverse population. And in order to interact with your peers, you have to acknowledge the differences and be aware of them, but also it's sort of like you have to get over them in order to have a very active social life at all.
Mm-hmm. Are there specific actions that the school takes to try to promote this? Are there things that are done, or is it something that
If there are, and I mean, there might be, you know, underhanded teacher methods to say, oh, well, you know, this group of students work together. But as far as I can tell, I haven't seen any, you know, blatant acts of, you know, we'll, you know, put kids together in any way. I think it's just the diversity sort of forces it, that you can't exist in your own little shell of a world. You know, it's sort of, I don't think the school does anything, but I think it's forced when you get here that, I mean, if you do want to speak to people and if you do want to have friends at this school, I mean, you can't stick to your shell of, you know, your close-knit group of friends. You have to go out beyond that. And in doing that, you're going to, you know, come across people that aren't like you. And I think it's just the normal flow of high school social life that introduces you to the...
Did you have the stereotypes before you came
back? Oh, yeah. And I think it'd be... It wouldn't be accurate to say that, you know, there are people who are completely open-minded and come to West Charlotte and don't have any stereotypes and, you know, everybody's, oh, I love everybody and, you know, that, like, I don't have any preconceived notions of how you're supposed to act. I mean, I think everybody, whether consciously or subconsciously, has preconceived notions of people before they meet them. West Charlotte just changed that for me. For me, I grew up in sort of a liberal household, so it wasn't, I mean, I don't think I had as many stereotypes as some of the people that I associated with when I came here. And to see them now from when they were a sophomore, they have changed completely, and not through any intentional action, but just through, you know, speaking and communicating and being friends with people who aren't like them. I mean, it's hard to, you know, to be friends with somebody and then to carry that stereotype onto somebody else because, you know, you say, well, it doesn't apply here, so how can I be sure that it applies to everyone I know?
How do you see that change? Is it just in things? How do you see it
all? I would say it's mostly the way I see it is in the way people speak about each other. You know, in sophomore year, there's a lot of they's and we's and, well, that's how they do it and, well, that's just how they are. That's how they speak. And now it's, I think it's individual more. It's, oh, well, he is a very bright kid, or she speaks that way because of this. I think there's a lot more understanding of cultural backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds where you don't just put a label on it. I think you more grow to understand why something is the way it is, why a behavior comes across the way it does.
Can you think of an example of that? Something that you would have perceived differently before having come?
I would say, I mean, for the most part, I would say before I came to West Charlotte, I didn't have a lot of black kids in my advanced classes. And I would say that there are smart black kids out there, but they just don't have the resources and tools to advance in this world. And I've never seen, like, a smart black kid in any of my classes before I came to West Charlotte. And first day I got to West Charlotte, I walk into my AG English class, and it's probably 60% black and 40% white, and it was really like, wait a second, you know, this is an advanced class. I've never been, like, I've been to integrated schools, but I've never been to an integrated class before. And so I thought, wow, you know, and I don't know if it was consciously at the time that I thought, wow, this is different. But looking back on it now, I can say that I don't remember thinking of advanced placement black kids in middle school. And now I think of it as really half and half, because all of my AP classes are, you know, half black and half white about. Like, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I would really say that I hadn't observed advanced thinking in minority students until I came to West Charlotte.
So you had been to essentially integrated schools, but you hadn't had a very integrated experience at those schools.
I hadn't, and that's been my general experience with Shelton Mecklenburg Schools, is that, you know, after you get off the bus, everybody's integrated, but once you go into your separate classes, it becomes, you're segregated again. And I think that is the thing about West Charlotte, and to be able to be around people who can verbally express, you know, what racism is like what being black in America is like, is what really, you know, wakes you up to reality, instead of thinking that, you know, like this is like the preconceived notions that, you know, we all have. I think it's being around individuals who are intelligent and well-spoken of all races is what really changed my perspective on how the world functions, I guess.
Is this something that students at West Charlotte talk about much? Racial issues? Is this West Charlotte?
I would say there's a certain comfort level around speaking about racial issues, so it's talked about freely. I don't know if I'd say a lot. There's a group of kids who go to diversity training camps and things like that, and come back and talk about it fairly openly. But I would say there's not tension around the subject. But I don't know if it's. I think it's just understood that. You know, we try to all get along, and, you know, we try to all understand where we're coming from, and we can't all the time, but I don't, it's not necessarily like, you know, you're black and you think this way, and I'm white and I think this way. I think it's more, I think this, and that's just understood as, you know, being said that way, maybe because of, you know, racial reasons, or maybe not, but it's not a forced issue. It's more just freely talked about when it comes up.
What about something like when this black fella got shot by the police officer, mm-hmm, a couple of years ago? Is that the kind of thing that students would talk about?
I think if they did talk about it, it would be more of a consensus. Like, everybody would say, well, yeah, you know, white cops shouldn't shoot a black guy. It's not like white people standing on one side saying, oh, you know, black people are dangerous, and black people standing on the other side and saying, well, you know, he had no reason to shoot him. It was, you know, the white cops are racist. I think it's more things are not looked at through a racial perspective as much. It's more looked at through just a human experience.
But you don't remember a particular discussion?
No, I don't.
I was just trying to think of an example. Well, you seem to indicate everybody fall on the side of the black guy.
I think so. I mean, From what I can remember, is that it was, well, as I remember, he hadn't done anything wrong. He was, you know, going about his business and was shot by a couple of police officers. So, through that perspective, it was, you know, innocent man shot by cops. It wasn't the black guy shot by the white guys, I think.
Well, who are your friends at school? Who do you spend time?
I would say that I'm in SEC, which is right across the hall, and there's three black guys and another white guy and an Asian guy and a black girl and two white girls. And that's, I would say that I have sort of different circles of friends.
Tell me about those circles. Who are
your
circles?
It was, I would say that I have circles of friends who, I have circles of integrated friends where, you know, I feel completely free to walk into the cafeteria, which unfortunately is where the black kids sit during lunch. But, you know, I walk in there and I see my friends and I go and I say hi and, you know, I mess around. But then I walk outside where the white kids sit and I eat my lunch, because that's where I have a seat. And, you know, I think that's who I have experiences and just more things in common with. And I don't think there's a forced separation in terms of the different little groups of friends that I have. Like, I'm friends with the people in SEC who are all, you know, advanced placement, very bright kids. And that's sort of a different level, actually, of conversation and interaction than with my little group of white friends who aren't necessarily all advanced placement. And, you know, we're more, oh, you know, did you see what happened in the ball game last night? And, you know, oh, what are we doing this weekend? But on SEC, with a more diverse group of people, and I would say a more intelligent group of people, it's I would say the discussions are more worldly, and, you know, we talk about things that I don't necessarily talk about with my little selective group of white friends. And but then, you know, I can go into the cafeteria and see, you know, what I don't want to say less intelligent, but I would say less intellectual black friends, and I'll be like, oh, you know, what's up? Like, you know, what's going on? And so it's, I think it's more of a separation of intellectuals, I would say, that the higher intellectuals sort of mix across races, and the lower intellectuals, it seems to be more of a separation of races, I would say.
Well, I was going to ask you about the cafeteria, which you go, and it's very obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah.
This difference. I mean, what is that about? What is that, or let me ask you, what does that say about West Charlotte, do you think?
I don't know if it says much about West Charlotte. I would say that it says about human nature in general, that you migrate to those whom you have the most in common. You know, just if you met somebody on the street and, you know, they were also a student, they also liked English, you know, they also like sports, you know, you have more to talk about with them and you have more to base a relationship on. I think that, I mean, very obviously the black kids sit with the black kids and the white kids sit with the white kids because that's who they're comfortable with and that's who they share more of a socioeconomic background with. I do think some of it is racial, but I think it's more socioeconomic that you sit with the people who share your interests. You know, like, I'm on the golf team here, and, you know, whenever someone plays golf, I always have something to talk with them about. And a lot of the black kids that go to school here don't really have, you know, an interest in golf or don't play golf. And I think it's more interest-based than socioeconomic-based than necessarily racially-based.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about this group of friends that you eat lunch with, are these people that you've known for a long time? Are these sort of people from your neighborhood, or is it just people you've come to know here at West Charlotte?
Probably half of them are people that I went to middle school with, and the other half are people that I've known throughout elementary school and middle school, and got to know really well when I got to West Charlotte. I knew of all of them before I came here. So it's more based on pre-West Charlotte experience than experience here at West Charlotte.
On the weekends and stuff, are these the folks you hang out with?
Yeah.
What do y'all do? You don't have to tell me everything.
Basically, go out and try to hang out with your friends and try to find someone's house whose parents are out of town and, you know, hang out there. It's not an elevated intellectual weekend that I have usually. Which I don't know if it's good or not, but, you know, I'm not challenged to think on the weekends usually.
Save that for
the weekdays.
Oh, what else are you, that this class you're talking about, the student government?
Right.
And do you have an elected position?
Yeah, everyone on the council is elected.
Okay.
I'm not elected to like a secretary or a treasurer or anything, but
you had to run a campaign.
Oh yeah.
What does it require to get elected to student government in West Charlotte? Who do you have to appeal to and how?
This is going to sound pretty negative, but I would say most generally you have to appeal to the greater black population. And in my speech, I incorporated rap songs and, you know, and really tried to appeal to African-American culture. And, you know, I guess it worked. Although I wouldn't say that that's absolutely necessary. there's another kid on SEC who went out and was plainly said, you know, this is who I am, and you know, and got excited, but not in, in the stereotypical African American way. It was more just eccentric in his own way, and that was just as well received as my speech was. So I would say that you have to appeal to the black community here at West Charlotte, but you don't necessarily have to go about it in a stereotypical black way. You can, I mean, West Charlotte is a place that really appreciates people who I think go out on a limb and do their own thing.
Well, you know, you've talked about sort of in classes, intellectual exchanges with your fellow black students and white students. What do you think you've learned about African American culture here at West Charlotte?
I would say the biggest thing I've learned is how hard it is in this country to be black and to be successful. I think that in black culture, especially in children, what is acceptable and what is cool for kids is not studying and reading and doing your homework. Where in my culture, that is acceptable. It is fine to do your homework and get good grades. But not necessarily in black culture, and I see a real alienation of those who try to be successful and who are successful. I would imagine that would be the single largest thing that I've learned, is that I can't possibly come to imagine what it is like to be young, black, and smart in American society. Because, you know, you're alienated by white people who are racist, and you're alienated by your own culture sometimes because of ignorance. And I would say that's the biggest lesson I've learned from black culture here at West Charlotte.
Do you think of West Charlotte as being an African-American institution? It's obviously a historically black school. You
know. I do. If you walk around, you don't see... University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, you see, you know, NCANT. You don't see Duke, you see Johnson C. Smith. And not that West Charlotte is simply relegated to sending kids to African-American schools, and not that they won't do everything in their power to send you to any school that you want to go to, but in general, in terms of, I think, administration and... Not so much teachers, but administration, student body, there seems to be more of an African-American overtone to the way the school functions, which I don't mind a bit, and actually I enjoy, because it's not the way that I live my life, and it's opening me up to a different side of our country that is just as vital to the success of our country as mine is, but... That doesn't always get the recognition that it should.
Was it surprising at first to see the office and to see all?
Oh, it's definitely surprising when I came to school and we had a fried chicken day, and we had rap music playing on the intercom in the morning, and but sort of a nice surprise and a nice awakening to, you know, what it is that West Charlotte is. You know, it's, yeah, a lot of schools, you know, call us ghetto and just things like that, but I'd say it's more than that. It's a appreciation of African-American culture, almost integrated with a diversity of kids that creates an environment for people to be successful in, where you don't worry about whether you're white or you're black or you're Asian, where it's, I don't know, you just feel free to be who you are, and it's not a big deal if you're white or you're black. You know, I've never ever seen somebody be treated differently by anybody, any staff here at West Charlotte, because they're white or black, and I'm not sure that I could say that if I went to a different high school.
Can you think of any particular, again, interested in sort of stories. Yeah. Can you think of any particular sort of encounter you had or experience that you had that might illustrate that?
Well, let me think. I remember when Principal Klein first got here, I saw him, and I was, he's a very intimidating man when you first meet him. He's especially if you're a student of his. And he was laughing and joking around with a few black students, and I sort of felt uncomfortable, you know, just sort of getting into the fray, because it appeared to me to be, you know, sort of, I don't want to say a black thing, but it appeared, you know, like a racial understanding between, you know, two African Americans, and you know, I didn't want to like feel like I was stepping on anybody's toes. And he looked up at me, and he was like, "What are you doing?" I was just like, he was like, "Come over here," and he started laughing and joking with me just the same. And it was sort of like an affirmation of, you know, what it is to be accepting of everybody, that, you know, that even when you're at your most relaxed, and when you're not worried about, you know, the social context of what you're going to say or do, you still like everybody, and you still want to help everybody.
Are there any particular classes that have been memorable for you here? Just in general, just kind of moving toward?
I would say that my U.S. History AP class last year was pretty memorable, because it was led by this old white teacher who's colorblind, and he started out the year by saying, you know, "I'm colorblind, so, you know, you can be black or white, or I don't care, it doesn't matter to me." And that was probably the first time where I really got into intellectual debates with African Americans who were smarter than I was and could illustrate their point better than I could. And so, you know, I found myself at a loss for words and sort of taken aback by how well spoken and how, you know, generally intelligent some of these kids were. And I thought, you know, I'd never really experienced this before. And from that point, as soon as I realized that, you know, wow, these kids really have something to offer, it was such a learning experience to find out what they thought about American history and find out, you know, a black perspective on. You know, the founding of our nation. It was really surprising to see, you know, the way they reacted to some things, and you know, informative, and just helped me, I think, to become more understanding of, you know, what it is to be black and in America.
Were there ever points at that course that were difficult for you to hear some of the things that they said?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's always times, I think, when you don't want to hear that you're racist, or you don't want to hear what your forefathers have done, like the horrible you know, inequities that have been forced upon black people simply because they were black, and that you feel bad about simply because you're white, and you don't want to feel I mean, you don't want to feel like it's your fault, but in some way, you sort of do, and you don't want black kids to have aggression or feel oppressed by you, but you know, in some way, they have to simply because of history. And I mean, that's hard to deal with. It's hard to say and come to terms with the fact that, yes, you know, my group of people oppressed your group of people, and to this day is oppressing your group of people. But, you know, let's, in terms of this classroom, let's move beyond that and discuss the ramifications of it and make it an academic subject. But in terms of just fessing up to that, it was difficult.
Is there any particular historical moment that
I was trying to think of that. When we talked about the civil rights era, we watched a movie called, I can't remember the title of the movie. It's about a black settlement right shortly after the Civil War.
It was like Rosewood.
And to see, and I never seen it before, and we watched it, and it was, I mean, it's, I don't know if I need to give a plot line for the movie, but it's about a settlement, a black settlement, rising up and being successful, and a white settlement, sort of moving in and, you know, antagonizing the black settlement. And, you know, there's a showdown, and a lot of white people are killed. And, to see, I don't want to say joy, but to see the satisfaction that was gotten by watching that movie from the black kids, where it was almost like that was the right thing to do, to have a massacre of white people. And I thought, you know, I got mad. I said, you know, how is that possible? That's not, you know, that's not right. And I talked with Jeff Black, who's a black man, who's a black kid on SEC, just won the Moorhead Scholarship. And I was talking with him about it, and I said, you know, I was like, how can that be okay? You know, how can it be all right for anyone to kill anybody? And he said, well, Ned, you know, black people were in slavery for about 300 years before that. And, you know, it was, you know, 300 years of aggression building up to, you know, say 20 white people dying. You know, like, for us, that's a small, he said small victory, but I don't think he meant, you know, like killing white people was a victory, but that fighting back, like eventually, like having a voice and standing up was a small victory. And for me, I sort of thought, well, you know, okay, I guess you're right. And after that, I reflected on it and thought, you know, I guess I don't want to think that black people have a right to have a distaste for me because I'm white, but they sort of do because of the history of this country. You know, I don't want that to be, I don't want it to be that way, but that's how it is, and I have a greater understanding of that now.
Well, tell me about your senior project. Which
you
came in.
Oh, my senior exit essay is about the resegregation of public schools and neighborhood schools, and there's been a proposal in Charlotte for not necessarily neighborhood schools, but for Charlotte to be divided up into a certain number of quadrants, and within your quadrant be able to select the school that you go to. And my paper isn't directly towards that, but it's more of an issue of there's a big outcry for neighborhood schools in Charlotte, and it kind of worried me because I thought, you know, I've been to predominantly white schools in Charlotte, and I've been to predominantly black schools in Charlotte, and predominantly white schools generally have more of a advantage in educational resources, and so I looked into it, and I found that if Charlotte was to go directly to neighborhood schools, that 9 schools would be out of racial balance, which is between 25% and 50% black population, and 7 of those schools would have over, I think, 60% white population. 3 of those having over 80 or something, and then 2 schools would have over 80% black population. And in terms of what I really found was that in terms of economic backing, to have neighborhood schools provides an inequitable situation for kids that would go to predominantly black neighborhood schools and kids that would go to predominantly white neighborhood schools in terms of their opportunity to receive an education. And of course, that all goes back to Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka, where basically it was found that separated schools don't work. You can't have white schools and black schools because of equity of opportunity for education. So basically my thesis is that neighborhood schools are unconstitutional.
What do you think about this whole debate that's going on?
I think the best way to deal with desegregation of schools is a tough question because I can't see a way that it has worked, you know, without flaw yet. But I'm worried that if you know, Charlotte is divided up into, you know, precincts or sections, and is and people choose the schools they want to go to, that Charlotte is going to get resegregated, and that basically kids that go to predominantly black or predominantly minority schools are not going to have the education or the ability to get the education that children are receiving at predominantly white schools. But I think in terms of Dr. Smith's plans, there are ways to get around that and to try to maintain, you know, racial harmony, as it's called.
But you think that's the major issue in school, desegregation, quality of education?
I don't think it is, and I think that's the problem. I think people are more concerned about just getting their kid to the best school possible and not worrying about the rest of it. And I think a lot of educators on the higher level are too much of politicians instead of, you know, true educators. They wanna please the majority instead of really looking at education as the primary goal of the educational system. I don't see anybody saying, well, how is my child's education going to be affected by this? It's who is my child going to go to school with, and where are they going to go to school? And I don't think that's the right question to ask.
What do you think is the right question to ask?
I would say universally the right question to ask is, you know, how good of an education is my child going to receive? However, I think that can be voiced more loudly by white parents with lots of money and lots of political power in terms of, you know, their job or their friends. And I don't think it's as easily voiced by African-American parents who, you know, work two jobs and live in the inner city. I think in that case, it's the responsibility of everybody involved in education to stick up for the rights of those who don't have parents to do it for them, because obviously the parent is a large, large part of, you know, what I haven't seen an editorial written by a child yet in the Observer. And so, I mean, I think it's a lot of parent influence. So I would say that the main question to ask is what is the quality of education going to be, firstly? And second of all, is that going to be for everybody, or is it going to be for a select group of people? It's great if you can educate a few people, but it's even better if you can educate everybody.
Well, I think when people first were talking about integration, desegregation of Charlotte schools, there was the idea that the legal basis was inequity.
Yeah.
That the schools weren't equal. But I think that at least among some people, there was also kind of wish that desegregation would go some ways toward uniting Charlotte as a community, mm-hmm. to sort of, that it would reach beyond the school walls.
Right.
Do you think that that has happened? From your experience, I mean.
To some extent, I would say yes, in terms of PTA conferences, and, you know, obviously there's more interaction between black and white parents. But in terms of more social circles, or I think the way that Charlotte as a whole looks at race, I mean, obviously the way Charlotte as a whole looks at race has changed from the 1970s. But I don't think it's done a lot to unite Charlotte racially. You know, I don't see black and white parents going to dinner parties together, or, you know, having Christmas dinner. I see, you know, in terms of a social circle, I think it's still mainly, you know, you stick with your race. And I think that's unfortunate. But again, I don't think it's based on, you know, I don't like black people, therefore I'm not going to, you know, socialize with them. I think it's socioeconomic background that, you know, if they have the money to join my country club, I'd love to have dinner with them. But if they don't, then I don't want to eat with them. And, you know, vice versa, you know, well, you know, who's this posh guy in his Mercedes coming down here trying to, you know, eat dinner with me? you know, get, you know, he needs just to go on. Like, he doesn't know what it is down here. And so I think it's, I think it's more of a socioeconomic problem than a racial problem.
So what has it done? You're going to say, again, you've talked to some extent, but you wanted to sum up at some
point. I would say that it's provided a much better opportunity for education for Black children. And it's opened the eyes of many, many white kids. For, I guess, was it 26 years now? Yeah, about. So for 26 years, it's been making kids who might not have been aware earlier of how it is to live in this country and be a minority, or to at least help in the process of letting kids be aware of, you know, their surroundings, and be aware of that the world is not seen through just their eyes, that it's, there's a whole lot of perspectives out there, and you're never going to know them all, but, you know, it helps to try to understand a few of them.
Well, this has been really great. Is there anything else that I haven't asked about that's about what is important about West Charlotte that you...
Well, there's on a small note is that West Charlotte is predominantly Black, and it's, I think it's 70-30 about Black to white. And just in that exchange, and you can tell that when you walk down the halls and, you know, you see mostly Black kids and not mostly white kids. And that experience, to some extent, has led me to feel what it's like to be a minority in you know, the greater community. You know, I mean, there have been times when kids have, you know, had racial slurs to say to me and, you know, laughed at me and pointed at me simply because I was white. And it was, you know, I'm alone in a hallway with, you know, 25 Black kids and I'm the only white kid. And you know, you get mad about it and you think, God, you know, that really makes me mad. But then, you know, when you step back from it and really look at it, you realize that must happen, you know, 50 more times to Black kids than it does to white kids. Per day or per hour or per minute. So it's really, it makes you a lot more sensitive to how it is that you view other races, I think.
You've obviously thought about all these issues a lot.
Yeah.
Why have you thought about them so much?
I think... for my own sake, I sort of had to think about them. I sort of reasoned out to myself why do I get mad when, you know, Black kids say, you know, derogatory things about white people, and why do Black kids say derogatory things about white people, and, you know, why do white people say derogatory things about Black people, and you know, why do I feel uncomfortable walking down the hallway by myself with 25 Black kids, knowing that nothing bad is going to happen to me. It's just a feeling of uneasiness. And I think I sort of just for myself had to reason them out. And my mom is a very large integrated schools activist. And my dad was a assistant superintendent in schools. And so it's sort of the dinner time conversation as well as what I really think about in terms of, you know, education in general. And also for my paper, I had to really reason out what my argument was going to be and, you know, what the advantages and disadvantages of integrated schools are.
So what influence do you think your parents has had on all of this?
I would say, for the most part, the largest influence, because I remember I came home sophomore year one time and was angry about a Black kid saying to me or something like that. And my mom said, well, Ned, I know you're angry, and Ned, I know that, you know, he shouldn't have said that. But just imagine if you went to school every day, you saw white kids drive nicer cars, you looked in the news and on TV and you saw white people having nicer things than you, your parents were uneducated, they didn't have a car, you had all these pressures of the world pushing down on you, and your only ability to lash out was to say, you know, something derogatory. Isn't that a small price to pay to suffer that? And, you know, I guess that really made me think that, you know, I guess it is that with all that I'm blessed with, simply because of who I was born, you know, by no fault of my own, and by no fault of others' own, that they're not blessed with some of the same things. It really makes you not take for granted what it is you're given. And it makes you understand that if you weren't given such things, how it is that you could feel angry or, you know, feel resentment towards somebody.
Have you ever discussed these issues with your Blackbirds? I mean, have they ever specifically talked to you about the difficulties that they felt?
Actually, no. I've never had someone say, it's hard to be Black in America because of. It's more, you know, I infer through stories that have been told. And I remember when my mom first moved down here, she walked into a store with one of her Black friends who was, I think it was a PTA member. They were just, you know, at like a PTA lunch, and then we're walking into a convenience store, and my mom went first and her friend went second, and the guy behind the counter said, "I'm sorry, I can't serve you." And my mom was like, "Well, why not? You know, I have money." And she, I think my mom thought that the lady didn't have money. She was like, "No, I have money, Edie." And my mom said, "Well, why can't you serve her?" And he bluntly said, "We don't serve niggers here." And I think stories like that, I mean, not to that extent, but stories like that have really opened my eyes to, you know, what it is that goes on and the racism and, you know, prejudice that exists in our country. But I've never actually had someone say, this is how it's hard it is to be Black in America. It's more, you know, what it is and what I observe people going through in terms of, you know, whether it be college information or, you know, SAT registration. It's a different lifestyle.
Well, I think we're talking about too much class away. Again, I'll give you one more opportunity if there's anything else that you have.
I covered about all of it.
Yeah. Where's your mother from?
She's from New York, actually, but moved down here.